What is up, basketball fans? Welcome to Live NBA Outlet. I'm your host, Nick Fay. With me, as always, Corey Waldron, and regular on the show, Jack Manuel. What's up, guys?
Rap City.
They did it. Drake called it. Drake predicted it. He said they were going to do it. Nick predicted it. Raptors, wow.
Impressive. Raptors win. The Eastern Conference Finals win four straight against the Bucks, who are arguably the best team in the NBA this season. How surprised are you that they won this series, you know, after watching games one and two?
Yeah, ahead of time, it sort of, it was just like, okay, well, then it's fait accompli. We're all analyzing, you know, Giannis against the Golden State Warriors. But the finals and the playoffs are a different sort of ball game. Things can change in an instant. And when you have a player with the talents of Kawhi Leonard, literally spoke about him just a few minutes ago with Nick on JVT. That'll be coming out pretty soon. He's the best player in the NBA right now. You know, Kawhi Leonard isn't playing, so... Kevin Durant isn't playing, sorry. And Kawhi Leonard is just doing some insane things. And I'm super duper excited to see him get some sort of revenge, even though in his head it's just another game for Kawhi. I'm looking forward to him getting some revenge against the Golden State Warriors after Zaza did him wrong those few years ago.
I mean, I was obviously Bucks heavy.
hey, you stayed strong with your take from early on, so you can respect that.
I think to a degree, I didn't really underestimate Kawhi, but everybody around him played ridiculous. I mean, Kyle Lowry was, as me and Nick talk, off wax, which I now love saying with Jack present because I know what it means. Kyle Lowry was fantastic this series. Arguably maybe his best playoff performance in the series to date. And then you had the bench. Serge Ibaka had big moments. Norman Powell was big. Fred VanVleet had 10 points between games one and three, and he had 34 after games four and five, or whenever he had again tonight. So that's the difference maker, those guys being able to score, and then Kawhi being as good as he was. And when he dunked on Giannis Antetokounmpo late in this game, I was like, that's it. That's the final play. I was like, it's over. This is it. And Kawhi was ridiculous, and the Bucks just, they're not ready. The experience to me is what really stuck out.
Yeah, experience definitely played a factor. And I think the one thing that impressed the most about Kawhi, we all expect him to put up a big offensive performance. He did the last two series. But when they switched him on the Giannis, that had a major impact on Giannis. And another thing that really stuck out for the Raptors side is their intelligence defensively. A lot of great rotations, a lot of great communication, especially when you're giving so much attention to one player. I felt like that really stuck out defensively for the Raptors.
Yeah, I think defensive identity has been the core of this Nick Nurse run Toronto Raptors team. Yes, they've got, you know, some offensive talent. You know, obviously you rely on a guy like Kawhi Leonard, and they've got very capable three-point shooters. Adding in a guy like Marc Gasol gives them a new wrinkle to their offense too, but they are defensively sound. And that was something that we were probably saying about the Milwaukee Bucks getting into this series and at the start of this series. Their defensive talent and their length and their size was just something that we thought would just be too much for the Toronto Raptors. But you look at the sort of experience, like sort of Corey was alluding to, these guys have been around the mark. You know, Kawhi Leonard's won the NBA rings and Finals MVPs. Danny Green has a ring. Marc Gasol's been deep into the playoffs. You know, Kyle Lowry's been deep into the playoffs. And I think that experience, and we'll see the Milwaukee Bucks back here again. Obviously, there's plenty of questions heading into their offseason, but for now, it's a Raptors night.
Yeah, I mean, looking at it from the Bucks' perspective, I mean, like, Eric Bledsoe was pretty bad this series. You wonder about what he looks like. Can he be the starting point guard, I thought, of a championship team? Is kind of the thought I had for most of this game. I'm not so sure he can be. But it was all Toronto. I'm really happy. Obviously, they've never been to the NBA Finals, so this is a big moment for the franchise.
And the Kawhi trade looks like a major steal right now, and that's no disrespect to DeMar DeRozan. They got him for DeMar DeRozan in a late first-round pick, and they got Danny Green as well, who had a terrible series. But automatically, they're winner of that trade because they're going to be in the NBA Finals, and that's something the franchise has never done. But in terms of the Raptor side, which player stepped up the most that you didn't anticipate stepping up?
For me, it was probably Kyle Lowry. It's something that I didn't expect it from him, but you know, I think that he had so many playoff demons, and maybe demons is too strong of a word, but you know, in the past, you know, without a superstar guy that like Kawhi Leonard behind him, Kyle Lowry has been forced to be probably the most important Raptors player. I know Corey and I have discussed it at length, you know, that Kyle Lowry probably over the Toronto tenure has been as important, if not more important, than DeMar DeRozan. apparently Norman Powell's better than DeMar DeRozan these days. I don't know where that came from. We can have a chat about that if you want. But Kyle Lowry was awesome. I think Fred VanVleet, you know, when he's out here having babies and dropping buckets, a nice little message for procreation out there for everyone. I think Kyle Lowry really stepping up into being that number two guy and really being the sort of, you know, the backseat, the sort of Robin to Batman with Kawhi Leonard. When they got those insomnia cookies back in the earlier rounds of the NBA playoffs, who would have thought that we'd come full circle and they'd be in the NBA finals just a few weeks later?
Yeah, X Factor for me would probably it would be a toss-up between the bench as a whole and then Kyle Lowry. I know that's kind of like a cop-out answer with the bench.
Yeah, just pick out the team.
I'll see every player.
I can see Fred VanVleet because, honestly, the three-point shooting he was able to add in the last three games of this series was monumental. I mean, the guy went unconscious. I want to plug the final numbers. He was shooting over 60 or over 80% from three for games 4 and 5. So after tonight, which he had another effective night, he's got to be right up there above 50%, 60%.
4 or 5 from three tonight.
What was he?
4 or 5.
All right. So he's shooting
80% again.
Yeah, exactly. So he's shooting over 85% for the series from three or these last three games. So for me, it was Fred VanVleet. And playmaking too. The ball moves better when he's out there in the second unit. The chemistry of him, Ibaka. I don't know. This Raptors team, I slept on a little bit. I'm not going to lie. It was a wake-up call these last four games.
Both great picks. I think Lowry, obviously, like you mentioned, Jack, he stepped up and he had the previous, you know, playoff failures. And it was, you know, he's obviously always going to have an impact on the game, you know, defensively, hustle plays. But I felt like when he was a scorer in the series, it really changed for the Raptors, especially when he knocked down some big threes. Like you mentioned, Fred VanVleet, Corey, three-point shooting was huge, especially the fact Danny Green was so bad, the fact they could bring in a second guard to really go out there, space the floor, make some smart plays. And also, I guess I'll just go with someone different. I thought Norman Powell impressed me in a couple games in the series where I didn't expect a lot, but he had that one big game, and they don't get that win without him. So the bench unit was huge.
Yeah, Norman Powell or DeMar DeRozan, 100%.
Tell us where that came from.
All right, so honestly, I kid you not, it's really just bullshit. I literally just sit here watching, and Norman Powell had he had a three. I was sitting there, I was like, man, you know, you got Kawhi, you got Danny Green. Yeah, I would totally rather have Norman Powell than DeMar DeRozan. Like, I don't know, just a thought I had.
When did K-Wall Hoops turn into a troll account? Wow.
The disrespect on DeRozan is real. But, I mean, I understand what he's trying to say, I guess, right there. But, like, in the moment because of the three-point shot. But, like, obviously that's just a situational thing.
A little take for Kyle Lowry as well. That one of the final plays of the game in the last sort of minute or so where he like cooked Chris Middleton, you know, that aggression we probably didn't see from Kyle Lowry in the earlier and maybe that confidence to make that play in the earlier parts of the playoffs. But the last few games we're sort of seeing him be more aggressive offensively. And that was a tremendously important play in such a tight affair.
Yeah, and I think Corey mentioned, sorry to cut you off, Corey, but I think it was his, when we were talking off wax, this is probably the biggest playoff series of his entire career and overall impact and the importance of what it's going to do when you look back at Kyle Lowry.
Yeah.
So you talked about the play of Kyle Lowry, his ball handling, cooking Chris Middleton. How about some of the sloppy ball handling by Chris Middleton late in that game? Like trying to go behind his back a couple of times at inopportune times, passes. Like he was, I thought, just idiotic with some of the ball handling stuff late in that game, just inexperience.
And this is what I was actually leading to my next question is, who on the Bucks least impressed you or had the weakest series that you anticipated more? And I think Middleton would be a popular name when you think of it.
Especially after how he performed against Boston.
Yeah, and I'd probably say Bledsoe. I think Bledsoe has, from being the lead guard to being their third best point guard.
Yeah, probably.
That's something to say for a guy who's on 4 years, $70 million. Obviously, that final year is only partially guaranteed. But I think now, if you could have had that money and given it to Malcolm Brogdon, you probably would have. Despite the fact that, you know, Malcolm Brogdon isn't a world changer and a world beater in any sort of sense of the word, he's fit alongside Giannis. And that's essentially what you need and want the most building forward for this Bucks team in terms of achieving a championship level. Yes, Bledsoe gives you tremendous defensive acumen as an All-NBA defender, but I don't think that's enough when it comes to the grit and grind of it, when it comes to, you know, a guy who's getting paid the money that he is. You know, I think you can sort of compare him to a Kyle Lowry. Kyle Lowry stepped up to the plate when the pundits were really getting on him. Eric Bledsoe, meanwhile, just, you know, shrunk into a shadow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think a good point about that would be too, like, Brogdon's younger, obviously. So Brogdon can become a far better player. Like, this is like peak Middleton, or not peak Middleton, peak Bledsoe. Like, what's his best career year? So how much better do we get offensively from this?
The lack of three-point shot really hurts when you're playing with a player like Giannis. Like, you need that three-point spacing. That's why having Brogdon and Hill out there benefited them so much more. And that's why Bud, in certain parts of the series, elected to bench Bledsoe because the spacing was so bad. Another guy, you guys mentioned Middleton, who I thought wasn't great, hurt his contract probably a touch going into the offseason. And Bledsoe obviously wasn't great. But Mirotić, who didn't even play tonight.
Yeah, he wasn't his series, doesn't really fit in.
Maybe we can get the Nets could get him on the cheap. I don't know.
I think what it proves is here is that, like, you don't look as Nikola Mirotić probably as a starter. And if he is, he's probably like your fifth starter. I think I would prefer him more in a bench role because he's so inconsistent all over the place. There was probably opportunities for him in the series where he just missed a lot of open threes.
Mm-hmm.
Most of his career, streaky guy. So anybody else on the Bucks that you thought could have had a better series that didn't?
I thought Pat Connaughton really dipped off the second half of the series.
Oh, he's like a number eight, number nine guy in a rotation. Like,
he was pretty big for them in the Detroit series.
And even in Boston.
Who are we comparing Detroit and Boston to this Raptors team? I mean, I get it. But at the end of the day, I think Mike Budenholzer shunk a little bit as well. It's sort of like a Coach Kenny-ism in terms of his like rotations. You know, benching, you know, Giannis, you know, two or three times at crucial moments or just too often and sort of just adhering to minutes limits or whatever it might be, you know, in a closeout game, 41 minutes is still a lot. But at the end of the day, I would have rather Giannis to see out there for 46 minutes, you know, Middleton out there for 45 minutes, you know, Brogdon out there for 38 minutes. I just don't think it was enough. And I think that, you know, you get caught into the sort of, am I resting them too much? Am I not resting them enough? At the end of the day, you know, Giannis Antetokounmpo is like 24 years old, an absolute beast of an athlete. Kawhi Leonard's playing out there maybe on one leg. I think we've almost forgot the narrative of him sort of tweaking his quad yet again. Yet he plays another 41 minutes tonight and was absolutely crucial and is proving himself to be one of the NBA greats. I just think that the coaching battle was clearly favored to Nick Nurse.
And I feel like the Bucks had Bud had the opportunity to do some really interesting things with the lineups they have and the players they have, and they just really didn't change it up, where the Raptors made the bigger adjustments and they really helped and changed the series and the Bucks didn't adjust.
Yep.
What do you think this says about Coach Bud? Because this isn't the first time he's had a really good team and they've kind of let him down deep in the playoffs.
I don't know if it can sort of you look at sort of different coaches and whether they sort of how much of an effect do the coaches have? And for me, there was, at the end of the day, it comes down to players and execution. That's all what it's always been. And we speak about Coach Kenny pretty consistently on the buzz, Nick. But he wasn't good this series. You know, I think that, you know, obviously you don't win, you know, four games in a row because the Raptors were just, it was the coaching battle. No, obviously, but it plays a part. How much of a part? I don't really know. But there's certainly elements of coaching where it played an impact. You know, does playing Bledsoe too many minutes, does not taking Bledsoe out of the rotation and giving all those minutes to Brogdon and Hill, does taking Mirotić out too late of the rotation, you know, make an effect? Maybe it does. Does not playing Giannis, you know, 45 minutes in the final sort of couple of games change things? I can't really say. And, you know, obviously maybe they're switching style of defense. Then the lack to be a switching style of defense, does that play a part as well? You know, I've listed off a couple of things that I think coaching can have an impact, and, you know, it doesn't necessarily lose you the four games in a row that they did, but it played a part.
I think it definitely plays a part. I mean, anytime you lose four straight games, you look at the guy who's manning the ship. You were up 2-0 going into Toronto, and, you know, close games. You had a couple leads at halftime. Even this game, they led at halftime, but this was one of the few games, too, where even when Milwaukee got up by as many as, 17 or 16 in that third quarter, Toronto was still controlling this entire game. But I agree, Jack. I think if you look at rotations, it was taking Mirotić out late. I thought maybe even running more onto the Kumbo at the five and going smaller might have been an option, but they rarely ever did that in this series. You know, you look at the defensive, the switching abilities of this team. I don't know. I think Coach Bud definitely got outplayed by Nick Nurse, which in his first year as the Toronto Raptors head coach is also going to the NBA Finals, which I don't know how many coaches can say they've done that in their first year as a head coach.
Steve Kerr, did he do it?
Yeah, Steve Kerr, right.
Yeah.
So that's really impressive for Nick Nurse. And like you guys said, Coach Bud, I wanted to see Giannis more at five. I feel like especially because the two guards in Brogdon and Hill were playing so well, they could have done some weird stuff. They could have probably put Middleton, Ilson Ilyasova out there and just like got really creative. And he was creative during the regular season, different lineups I saw, especially when they had injuries. It's just like he got a little bit more nervous in the playoffs. And like we said, Nick Nurse made the adjustment, switching Kawhi onto Giannis, and then also just changing up the way they double-teamed Giannis as well.
Yeah.
In terms of that, Nick, Ada sort of jumped in. Is Kawhi, in terms of you know the Kawhi rotation onto the Greek Freak, he sort of said that you know Giannis isn't a closer. What do you think about the sort of battle between the two star players? Obviously, it was clear favor to Kawhi, but did Giannis shrink from the moment?
It's tough to say. I think a lot of credit, sorry to cut you off, Corey, goes to Toronto's defense, and I don't think Toronto's defense was just Kawhi. I think the adjustment of having Kawhi on him had a really big impact because of the strength Kawhi has, but the overall impact really came from the rotations that the Raptors made defensively, and they're able to recover so well, and they just really made his life extremely difficult in the half court.
Yeah, and also, like, I don't know if this is a hot take. Like, I don't really feel like Giannis is at the point where he's like a crunch time playoff game closer. Like, I feel like you need to have more of a versatility. Like, for Giannis, like, you know he has to drive or get around the hoop, so there's more of a chance for Diva to put pressure on you. You kind of need the floor spacing and the shooters. And with Middleton being so inefficient, I don't think Giannis shrunk from the moment, but he got a lot more attention in crunch time because of the guys around him struggling.
Yeah, I mean, I think you automatically assume that he deserves that type of role because then we're considering him a top five player now.
No, of course.
And he's an MVP. So, like, I think to an extent he's shrunk in the moment, but it's more so his skill set doesn't allow him to excel in certain situations because he doesn't have the jump shot. And then the free throw shooting was really bad, and I think that impacted the Bucks and him in the series.
Yeah, all
are those the two things that you'd be focusing on if you're Giannis in the offseason?
Yeah, I mean, a jumper is the most obvious thing here. And then obviously free throw shooting, I thought he was fine during the regular season. It was probably more of like a mental thing in the playoffs. So I think, you know, getting a jumper is obviously going to be the most important thing. And then learning to read the defense a little bit better. This is probably his first year where he's starting to really get a lot of double teams or a lot of defensive attention. And like I said, the Raptors did a really good job of switching it up and also rotating from all different spots on the floor.
See, I buy the jump shot thing, obviously, but, you know, there was a lot of people sort of comparing to Ben Simmons in this last game. I don't think he's certainly on that trajectory because Giannis has shown plenty of moments where he's shown some confidence in that area, and maybe the moment got to him a little bit in this game, and maybe he just didn't have that confidence in his shot to sort of, you know, the lack of missing that shot would have weighed him down more than, you know, just not taking in the first place. I'm not 100% sure, but I think he also needs to work on, I think his offense, you know, is predicated on power and athleticism, but he needs to get a little bit more finesse when it comes to the driving. You know, he's got that massive Euro step. He can power guys down and he can get offensive rebounds, but I think he does still need to get, you know, a few more moves, whether that's some, you know, some post moves with a guy like Hakeem Olajuwon in the offseason or whoever it might be with his coaches. You know, I think that the jumper is incredibly important, and I think that will be obviously an emphasis. But, you know, we always say that there's – and what has been the direct trend has been the correlation between free throw shooting and three-point shooting. And Giannis's free throw shooting has been quite poor of late, despite the fact that it's been okay. You know, it's around that sort of 70% sort of range. But I think he does need to work on a few other things too.
Yeah, I think if he had any type of post game, that would be really huge for him. And I also think if he was, you know, a couple steps out from the block, we saw him do this a little bit more in the Boston series. Just some of the looks that he was getting in the series weren't great. And it was just like so much for him to try to put the team on his back and like, all right, you're going to bring the ball up and you're going to run the offense and you're going to go score instead of just like, hey, you know, let's run the offense a little bit and then set Giannis up so he can get some easy looks. And that kind of goes back to Coach Bud trying to find a way to get your best player in a great position to score.
I mean, yeah, I mean, he shot under 40% tonight. He shot 5 of 10 from the free throw line, which is really what kills you. And like you said, mentioned on the looks, there were several looks tonight where, like, he's almost got three defenders around him. He's just kind of, like, tossing up the ball, like, haphazardly, hoping to get a foul, of course. But it's tough when you get limited like that. They have to be able to move the ball around in the half court. Like, I don't know. And also, it felt like, especially early in the fourth, they were trying to force the tempo, but they had no offensive rhythm, but they were still trying to move the ball up quicker. And then Toronto was forcing turnovers off that. So it's problematic when Antetokounmpo gets stopped in the half court.
And I think another series what really stuck out is that Middleton was so much better. So it was like, okay, you guys are going to give him so much attention. We're going to have Middleton in almost an ISO situation. But the other Raptors defenders did a good job of Middleton, and he just struggled in the series too.
Yeah,
I think their ability to limit that 3-point shot and their perimeter defense was tremendous. And I think that it exposed, you know, Mike Budenholzer's offensive game plan to an extent. You know, obviously it's predicated on Giannis driving and kicking, and we've spoken about, you know, plenty of guys who weren't hitting their shots. And you know, obviously Middleton is their second best player, and you know, he's probably going to be getting a decent contract, you know, wherever he goes. Obviously, the Bucks can offer him that extra year, which will probably entice him to stay. But I think that there is still the nucleus here for a championship team in Milwaukee because they are still young. Like Corey said, they are inexperienced. Sometimes you have to lose one to win one, as the old saying goes. But we'll see how it all plays out in Milwaukee.
Now, do you guys think Middleton's locked to stay with the Bucks, or he's possibly to leave? And how do you think this series kind of impacted his contract?
I don't think it changed much, to be honest. You know, obviously, you know, you have those moments within the playoffs, but I still think he is one of the better wings, you know, guards, whatever you want to call him, in the playoffs, and has a tremendous skill set on both sides of the floor. You know, I would much rather have him than a Tobias Harris on my team. And if you're giving both of those guys, you know, max contracts, $30 million, $35 million a season, I think I would much rather have Chris Middleton as my number two. And I think that he is a number two if you have another 2A next to him. And, you know, Bledsoe wasn't able to be that 2A. Brogdon can be that 2A in a combination of George Hill. But how the Bucks, you know, make the moves around the wings, not around the wings, but around the waves, and sort of build the other parts of the roster is going to be interesting to see, because you're predicated on being, you know, super teams. That's what it is these days. But Toronto has Kawhi Leonard. And then they have, you know, Kyle Lowry, Marc Gasol, Serge Ibaka, Pascal Siakam. Very, very good players. You know, Pascal Siakam was anointed sort of the number two guy, probably a little bit too quickly. But there's enough, you know, deep talent, as sort of Corey alluded to, with the bench and their depth of talent, that it sort of makes up for having, you know, four all-stars and five all-stars as starters. So I think, you know, Chris Middleton didn't really do himself any harm. I think that those that do and will look into it a little bit too much are probably being a little bit haphazard.
I mean, he's going to get his money, I think, regardless. I mean, being an all-star and what he did up to this point, you still like what the season overall. Obviously, it was a little bit of a down year from last year, but I don't think it affects his money. Does Milwaukee bring him back? I mean, that's an interesting question, because you got to pay Brogdon as well. You just got done paying Bledsoe. I think you're still locked into Tony Snell for one more year, and he doesn't even play. So there is some issue with cap for Milwaukee. So maybe you think about letting, you know, you let Middleton walk. I don't think you can allow him to walk, especially because I think him and Antetokounmpo, like, they seem to have a lot of on-court and off-court chemistry. I think they're actually really close. So I think they want to keep Antetokounmpo long-term, with apparently the Lakers hiring Jason Kidd in hope to maybe lure Antetokounmpo to Los Angeles. Have to say, because that's technically the rumor that came out. But I think for Milwaukee, you don't want to let Middleton go too far if him and Antetokounmpo, you know, are friends. And I think you're 100% right, Jack. He can be a two player, but you definitely need a 2A player alongside Middleton.
Yeah, there's definitely, I would think, a major drop off if they were to lose Middleton. Like, he's that good of a player for that team, and there's just so many guys in the team, they're not going to be able to retain everybody. You know, they have Middleton's a free agent, Brook Lopez is a free agent, Mirotić is a free agent, Malcolm Brogdon's a restricted free agent. So, and George Hill's on a partially guaranteed contract, which if they want to save money, they'll probably cut him. So they have a lot of big decisions. I don't want to say it's a letdown, because I think it's really hard for a team on their first deep playoff run to make it to the finals. So I think it was probably still a successful season for the Bucks, if you ask me.
I'm always in the mindset where if you progress, like, obviously they never got out of the first round. They got out of the first round, then they got out of the second round to the conference finals. So, I mean, at this point, you've had the progress you were looking for when, for 2 years ago, you were barely making the playoffs. So I think this is definitely a win, because who saw them winning 60 games and being first in the East? Obviously, it's got a little bit of a sour taste, and leaves a sour taste in the mouth right now, but I think it was a good season overall still.
Yeah, for sure. Now, you guys, what do you think about the matchup? We're not going to dive into a preview, just a couple quick thoughts on what you think about Raptors and Warriors in the finals now.
And if KD's not healthy, I'm looking forward to seeing Kawhi eat up the Golden State Warriors. I mean, yes, the Warriors have been fun of late, but they're still the villains to me. Toronto's always been my second favorite team ever since I've started following the NBA. I'm a big fan of Toronto. I've been to the city, been to a few games myself. A big fan of, you know, Drake, despite the fact that I haven't liked his antics as much in the playoffs. And I know my boy Nick Busing, let his thoughts be known on an upcoming JBT too. But Kawhi against the Golden State Warriors, that's what, for me, what I'm tantalized to see. And I don't think that they can stop him, you know, with just Draymond. They're going to need KD to come back and soon. And whether that forces their hand a little bit with now the fact that they're versing, you know, Toronto and the talents of a guy like him, it will be interesting to see. Certainly watch this space.
The thing I've been seeing a lot is the fact of, you know, who knows if Kawhi doesn't get hurt a couple years ago on the Spurs, maybe the Spurs beat the Warriors. So this is Kawhi Leonard's, like, you know, John Wick moment. Like, yeah, they keep asking if I'm back. Like, I'm thinking I'm back.
Yeah.
So I think he's going to have a nice big series. I'm looking forward to seeing, you know, now Curry versus Kawhi in essence, until obviously Kevin Durant will, I'm expecting to be back at some point in this series. Probably, or I'm guessing, if I had to guess, probably like game three.
Cousins is supposed to be back too.
What?
Cousins, they said, is supposed to be back too.
Exactly. And Cousins is another boost. But it's going to be an interesting series, especially those first couple of games. And who knows if the Raptors can steal one or two and all of a sudden, you know, put some pressure on the Warriors, make those guys come back, like you said, Nick, back from injury, maybe a little bit too soon. Kawhi and the Raptors have a lot of juice right now. And they're fresher. I think having to wait, I think that plays a factor. I know it's good for health. But, like, the Raptors have just a lot of momentum. A game seven walk-off shot. Now they're winning in six. I think that carries over.
I think it helped their confidence level as an organization, especially with the previous seasons not going as they predicted. Having a guy like Kawhi that has such great poise and then just the overall confidence building up, like we mentioned, Lowry being so good. How do you think the break is going to actually benefit the Raptors? Now, I believe the final zone starts on May 30th. We know Jack mentioned earlier, Kawhi's on one leg. Siakam had the calf injury in the last series. Marc Gasol's in young. Kyle Lowry's in young. Do you think winning tonight was a big benefit for the Raptors instead of having to play a game seven?
Oh, of course it is. I mean, you'd be silly not to think that. But at the end of the day, it's the NBA Finals. There's a championship on the line. These guys would be playing unless they were incapacitated. That's the only way that these guys aren't going to be suiting up. And I think that Kawhi Leonard has proven that, you know, if there were any sort of doubters about, you know, his ability to play through injury and to play through being hurt, then I think those have been put to rest. And, you know, obviously it helps the Niggles having those 4 days off, but the Warriors are going to be fresh too. I don't necessarily buy into the fact that, you know, that extra 5 days is going to help. Corey sort of mentioning the fact that they could have some momentum, the Raptors. I think it's 0-0. You head into... is Golden State going to have home court?
That's a great question. I want to say the Raptors.
It's the Raptors. Who had the better record? Is that who gets home court?
Yeah, Raptors did. They won one more game this season.
Yeah.
Oh, that's going to be crucial, I think. I think, you know, you're hanging around, maybe trolling some of the Golden State Warriors fans, putting stars on his Instagram page and inviting them to OPO Fest. We'll see how that happens, but I'm really excited for this series. Really, really excited, and might have to have a few days off work just to watch some of the games.
Jack, you got the flu, I think. I think that the 5 days off is actually going to benefit the Raptors. Like, the fact Kawhi's leg is so messed up, and like, yo, watching him at the end of that game, he's huffing and puffing. And like, no, there's no doubt that he would play in the series regardless if like he broke his toes. Like, but I think the fact he's getting a little extra rest after getting carried, and I think his leg just getting a little extra time to heal should help him get closer to 100%. Because I think we'd agree even as well as he played, there was moments where you're like, all right, Kawhi's probably not 100% right now, especially with the way he kind of like laterally moves sometimes. And even on some of the dunk attempts, I know he dunked on Giannis tonight, but it wasn't like he got really high off the ground.
Yeah. No, I think you look at that entire starting lineup, every single person's going to benefit. I think Danny Green, you know, they didn't play him late in game seven for like the final like 6 or 7 minutes. And that's it. I wonder if he's banged up, because he's also like a Warrior who like doesn't complain about injuries, because he just hasn't looked right either. So I wonder if he's banged up. So overall, I think he's going to benefit the entire starting lineup.
He played with a groin injury a majority of last season by choice.
Yeah, a tear. Didn't he have a tear?
Yeah, and that just sounds terrible. Like, that just sounds not fun. So, I mean, if they would need him to play really a lot better if they want to beat the Warriors or have a chance of beating the Warriors, because he's been bad. I put the stats out before at the halftime of this game. I want to say he was shooting like 4 of 20-something from three-point line.
Yeah, but it could all change in the matter of a moment, like with Fred VanVleet. You know, I think that you throw stats out the window when it comes to an NBA Finals game. You know, this is the these are the games where, you know, fairy tales are made. People put their name down into the history books, and you know, it could be guys like Norman Powell as Corey's boy. It could be guys like Sean Livingston or Jordan Bell, who have these sort of, you know, heroic moments. You know, all it takes is one moment to change a series. And I'm super excited just because this is what we've all been waiting for. You know, I remember doing previews with you guys about the Golden State Warriors and the inevitability factor that it was going to be another sort of Golden State Warriors championship. Yeah, I mean, the inevitability's there, but I'm questioning my own take a little bit, which I'm sort of happy about.
Yeah, and you feel like this year, you know, last year against the Cavs, you didn't feel like the Warriors were going to lose. Like, there is a possibility they could lose the series. I mean, it's not, like, favorable or anything like that, you know, and we're going to do a deep preview on it, but there's a possibility they could really lose.
Yeah. We've been asked for our predictions, boys, by Ada.
He's going to have to wait for the preview for that. Jack,
can I do mine? Because I don't know if I'll be on the outlet, so I might have to give mine. I'll try and jump on.
Drop them, Jack. Drop them. Give them a taste.
Yeah, I'll do. And if I do, I might just give a second prediction and see if people notice it. Because I literally did that a couple of years ago. No, yeah, last year in the Pelicans Blazers series, where I did one for JBT and one for the outlet. So I covered my ass both ways. I was really happy with that. Will Jackson, by the way, has got Raptors in seven. I mean, I'd love that. I've got Golden State in six. Obviously, the fact that they don't have home court, so you would expect them to want to close it out at home and they're in front of the Oracle for the final time. Golden State in six for me. I'll be interested to hear your thoughts when it comes out. Make sure you subscribe on iTunes.
Yeah, iTunes, Block Talk Radio, GBasketball.com, Google Play, Dash Radio, and YouTube. But Will has been riding pretty hard with the Raptors. He looks like he bought some stock on them.
I mean, that stock's only rising.
It's good stock.
It's like, you know, it's certainly not like the Bitcoin that's been going around these days. It's sort of like that sort of Apple stock. It's always going to be steady. Amazon's always rising. Let's do a stock podcast, boys.
I watched Limitless today, so there's some stock stuff there.
There we go. But,
any other final thoughts or storylines that really intrigue you about Raptors, Warriors?
We could see the battle for who is the best player in the game. Corey and I are really sort of going to get into depth of who the top 50 players are in the NBA. And obviously we get plenty of sort of, you know, criticism and praise from it. And it's a really fun exercise, but this could decide who number one is.
At least for the year.
For the year. And it always is a snapshot in time. You know, we did it last year and, you know, it's always LeBron most of the time, but by the end of this series, it could be Kawhi at number one. It could be Kevin Durant at number one. It could be Stephen Curry at number one. We don't know, but I'm intrigued to see who that is going to be, because I don't know if Giannis is going to be there anymore. It's certainly not going to be James Harden, but I think it could be a battle between Kevin Durant and Kawhi Leonard.
I will say right now, I think Giannis has already dropped. Like, I think without a doubt he's dropped in my mind, just looking at how Kawhi went head-to-head with him. And I already think Durant and Curry are almost on a different level to begin with. I think, like, Durant, Curry, and Kawhi, at least at this stage, because obviously we had Curry without Durant and then Durant healthy, which is two different versions. But, like, with now Curry, early playoff Durant, and Kawhi now, I mean, these have been the three best players. I mean, these have been some incredible stretches from all three of these guys in those stretches they've played.
Yeah, historic postseason. I would agree. I think Giannis probably dropped a little bit with the closing, and then also the free throw percentage really kind of throws you off when you can't finish out games and hit big shots. And obviously Kawhi's two-way impact in the way he kind of slowed down Giannis on one end. And KD, you know, obviously he was amazing. And Steph would almost be the dark horse to somehow walk away and have an amazing NBA Finals, win Finals MVP, and then all of a sudden we're talking again about him maybe being the best player in the league. So I love that, you know, comparison right there. Who do you guys think currently, right now, before we see the finals, has been the best player in the NBA this season?
Listen to JBT to hear my thoughts.
Who's your top two? So we could just, like, give some intrigue to it.
Kawhi Leonard and Kevin Durant.
Okay, just making sure.
Yeah.
What do you got, Corey?
So for the year, including playoffs, I'm probably between Kawhi. I mean, like, I almost want to say Kawhi and Curry because Curry's just fresher in my mind.
You got to pick one.
I got to pick my pick right now. I mean, if I'm going right now, it's Kawhi. Kawhi's had bigger shots, I think.
Yeah.
But I mean, the dominant performance, I mean, that last five games for Curry, he's had 4 30-point games in the last five games in the playoffs, which is incredible. One of them, he had zero at halftime. So it's ridiculous. But I think it's been Kawhi overall because he's also had the most, you know, my team needs me to hit this shot kind of moments.
He's probably had to carry the biggest load in terms of, you know, other guys not stepping up until this series probably.
Especially against Philly.
Yeah. Against Philly, he was really big. Even against Orlando, he had some really big games. And I think the one thing that would give him the nod over, you know, Steph would probably be, you know, the defense. And then KD being injured just kind of hurts his case because he's less fresh in your head.
Yeah.
And Jack sitting there with no emotion, just not trying to let us know who he picked.
JBT guys, subscribe on iTunes, Bolt It Radio, all those stuff that Nick likes to say. Plenty of podcasts on the OTG network, designtree.com, dsgntree.com/offtheglass.
Yeah, and there is a sale this weekend, flag 10, $10 off, plenty of tees that we got available, and we'll be dropping more early in the week, actually.
Yes, sir.
But guys, I just want to get quickly before we get out of here, if you had any issues for each team, I know we already have one issue with Corey, but starting with the All-NBA teams, you know, Giannis, Steph, Paul George, James Harden, and Jokic. Any issue with that or any surprise?
No, probably would have had him be in the first team, but you know, I chatted about it with Nick on JBT as well. I think that the All-NBA teams are pretty fine with what they are. You know, you could probably have Kevin Durant in the first team over Paul George and all those sort of different things. But I think that the selectors got it right, but I'm not a big fan of the selection system in the first place either.
Yeah, I don't really have any qualms. I mean, you can make the case that maybe Embiid and Jokic should flip or Durant and Paul George. I think Paul George probably should have been second team just because he had like, I think there was a crazy stat. He had like 25 plus games where he shot under 40% from the field. Like obviously he had a tremendous year, but he was so inconsistent at times. But you know, I didn't have any issue with that. And just some of the people that they get votes to, it's like, come on, like, are you taking this serious?
Someone White, baby. Me.
Yeah. Someone picked Marvin Bagley, didn't they, on like 13?
Yeah.
I don't and these people are impacting people's paychecks at the end of the day.
Yeah, so like, that's why they gotta mess with the system. Like they have to change it around if people aren't gonna take it fully serious.
Yeah, Nick and I literally went on a pretty tangible rant about the fact that, you know, media are having an effect on like, you know, you can have biases in sort of way. And shout out to the side fringe and Corey's rocking right now.
What?
You're rocking the Bieber fringe, my dude. I'm loving it.
I don't have gel in it. Sorry. Late.
He's not taking the show serious. He didn't put gel in his hair. That's messed up. But yeah, I would probably put KD and Embiid on the first team and take Jokic and Paul George down. But like you guys mentioned, not a big deal. Second team, KD, Joel Embiid, Kyrie Irving, Kawhi Leonard, Dame Lillard. Nothing really to change here, right?
No, nope. This is good.
And then third team, we got Rudy Gobert, Blake, LeBron, Kemba, and Russell Westbrook.
I mean, Danilo Gallinari should be on that third team ahead of LeBron James.
Okay.
LaMarcus Aldridge should be above LeBron James. That's what? The only
No.
You're seriously saying that? Are you? Is Bill Simmons now your best friend in some way?
Well, we didn't know his nephew.
When we recorded live, Nick, didn't I say LaMarcus
Aldridge? Yeah, he did. He did.
I thought LaMarcus Aldridge was really good for what the Spurs did this year.
I thought maybe the other argument that some people brought up, but I'm okay with Gobert, has mentioned Towns being over Gobert.
Yeah, I saw that too. But the record for me, like, you can't be that bad. And I get that's not how this is determined, but you can't because, like, I don't know, the team is so bad.
Yeah. It should be like it's similar with all defense. It should be you're voting for the 15 best players. Like if you're going to tie contracts to it, give the money to the 15 best players in the league. And if you're saying that LaMarcus Aldridge is a better player than LeBron James, then you don't watch basketball. And I'm not saying that about you, Corey. I'm not saying that about you. Maybe a little bit. You also did tweet out that Norman Powell greater sign than DeMar DeRozan.
It was a joke.
It's on the internet and it will remain there forever. If you ever become famous, or
put out a t-shirt.
And I'll explain and I'll laugh. I'm like, you got, and I'll just tell him you take social media too serious. Not everything's serious.
Get on the tees. Get on designtree.com, dsgntree.com/offtheglass. But yeah, and it's a flawed system, but so there's so many flawed systems within, you know, so many different things from politics to basketball or life. Whenever I'm on a podcast with Corey, I get too worked up.
It's like the heat is rising right now, like in Jackson.
I mean, it's pretty cold. It's winter here in Melbourne right now. Winter, winter has arrived, but man, it's always hot with Corey Walton.
Like I said, we said on the podcast a couple months ago, God, time flies. But I said, like, LeBron James probably gets it. It's not like he didn't deserve it. He had 27-8-8 or whatever it was. But I just thought Aldridge was a little bit more impactful. And I think when your team makes the playoffs, it's a little bit different. Like, Kemba Walker, like, it's an asterisk because his team's just complete dog shit. And he has to do so much. He has 40-plus point games, and they lose by 20 still. Like, it just does – or 15. And they're not, like, empty stats. Like, he just balls out, and he has no help. So, like, for me, like – it just depends on the case. Like, obviously, Aldridge is not better than LeBron James. He's not even a top 20 player. But I thought he was really good this year. And then Kemba deserved it over Klay Thompson. I don't care.
Yeah, that's fine.
I had in my polls that I referenced on JBT as well, the sort of big ones were Towns over Gobert, and that was a pretty sort of 50-50 split just in favor of Gobert. It was sort of like a three-way tie almost between Beal, Thompson, and Walker. Funnily enough, Klay did take it out. But I'm going to repeat what I said on JBT, that Klay Thompson had a very poor start to the season. And it wasn't until, like, you know, he had a couple of lights-out games on one of them, especially against Chicago, that he started to hit his stride. Whereas we were talking about Kemba Walker as, like, an MVP contender at the start of the season. And obviously, he did tail off, and the Charlotte Hornets were pretty trash. But I think at the end of the day, you put Kemba Walker on a lot of other different teams, they're going to be playoff teams as well. If you put, like, you know, LaMarcus Aldridge in Charlotte with, you know, Nicholas Batum and Malik Monk and Jeremy Lamb, are they going to be any better? No. I think that Kemba Walker's a more valuable and better player. I buy into it, to the sort of team dragging your team to the playoffs sort of aspect to an extent. But if your team is trash around you, you know, there's only so much, like, you know, glitter you can put on trash to make it look fancy.
It's true. It's true. But we could talk about this all
day. You're bashing home the LaMarcus Aldridge thing.
Let's talk rookies, okay? We're going to go first team, Luka, Trae Young, DeAndre Ayton, Jaren Jackson, Marvin Bagley. Like we talked about, Jack a little on the buzz, all top five picks. They're really good. I don't think any complaints about the first team.
None at all.
Yeah, and then second team, we got Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Colin Sexton, Landry Schmidt, Mitchell Robinson, and Kevin Huerter.
I don't have any complaints. I feel like these are the 10 best rookies.
Yep. I would say that as well.
That's what we pretty much said on the buzz as well. The only thing we talked about was just some of the votes being weird, but we don't have to dive into that. Now onto the defensive teams, which is going to be fun. First team all defense, we got Giannis, Eric Bledsoe, Paul George, Rudy Gobert, and Marcus Smart. Thoughts on first team?
Yeah, I mean, I would have personally had Jrue Holiday in the first team. Obviously, maybe the games played affects that to an extent. And I think that how you judge defense, and I think that this award more than anything is where you have, you know, personal biases towards how you value the game on that side of the floor. But I think the biggest thing for me, and I spoke about it again, referencing JBT and speaking a little bit to Corey on Twitter and sort of, you know, what he was sort of posting about Miles Turner too. I think that, again, the all-defensive team is a flawed system because you should be voting for the 10 best defensive players, not the two best centers, the two best wings, and the two best guards, because Miles Turner is a top-five defender this year, but he doesn't make the team. And, you know, I'm not saying it's a travesty. It's a bit, you know, strong of a word, but it's travestic, if that's, you know, a synonym or adjective that I can describe.
Possibly. First team, any thoughts before we get on to the second team, Corey? You don't have to give me...
First team was okay.
Honestly, I think Jrue Holiday over Eric Bledsoe is like a thing I like strongly believe.
The only thing, it's all deserved, I think, for first team. But you can make the argument like you were going, Nick.
Yeah, I just think Holiday, and Jack and I saw him live, and I think his overall impact on the defense was just really, really important. And I don't think you realize how much he does off ball. And I just feel like Eric Bledsoe's like defense is a little bit hyped up sometimes. I don't know. I'm just not a huge Eric Bledsoe guy, and he kind of made me feel good this series.
I feel like the record too kind of is what affected that, Matt. Like I'm saying, like you see Bledsoe, okay, good defender on a 60-win team. Oh, or Holiday on a team with really good defense. Like I just think like that like cloud judgment. I think you're right. Holiday, I would take over Bledsoe in a heartbeat.
Yeah, and I think Jrue has more versatility in defending more positions. We've seen him even have to go on threes at some points, but that's for, like you said.
Kevin Durant hasn't he before as well on
yeah, numerous positions. Yeah, he did last year in the playoffs when they faced at Golden State. And, I mean, he didn't shut him down because no one can, but I thought he did a solid job.
Yeah.
Now, on team two, we got Jrue Holiday, Klay Thompson, Joel Embiid, Draymond Green, and Kawhi Leonard.
Yeah, I mean, I don't hate this team either. I think that it's. I mean, Draymond Green had a poor season, regular season, but you know he's showing out right now that he's lost all that baby fat. but Miles Turner deserves to be in this team as a forward, in some sort of sense of the word. I'm sticking up for your boy here, Corey. I'm showing you some love and showing Indiana some love because Miles Turner is one of the best defenders in the league in 2018-19, and it sucks that he wasn't recognized for it.
You ready for the stats, boys?
Oh, okay. Give it to me.
These are the only six stats I give an F about. I don't know why. I choose to curse at weird times. All right. So Joel Embiid, who made the team, 122 total blocks, 1.9 blocks per game, a defensive rating of 104, a 4.4 block percentage, 3.8 defensive win shares, and a 2.1 defensive box plus minus. Now, Miles Turner. 199 total blocks, 2.7 blocks per game, defensive rating of 101, block percentage of 8.4, defensive win share of 4.4, defensive box plus minus of 4.7, every single category better than Joel Embiid, and against Rudy Gobert, every single stat was better than Rudy Gobert except for defensive rating, and Gobert's defensive rating I think is a 99 or 100. Oh, and I think his defensive win share too was 5.8, not 4.8. And I think it was like a little slight difference.
So what you're saying, Corey, is men lie, women lie, numbers don't.
Stats don't lie.
Snacks don't lie either.
Stats don't lie. Joel Embiid was phenomenal. Didn't deserve it. Shouldn't be yelling at midnight. Forgot what time we're podcasting. But Miles Turner got snubbed, without a doubt.
Yeah, I think it's definitely close, and I think if you wanted to give Miles Turner a nod, I think it would be his perimeter defense and his ability to be really good in the pick and roll defensively, which Joel Embiid kind of struggles in. But I would say the only thing Embiid would probably get a nod, he's a better defensive rebounder, and he's more of a presence in the paint, where Turner's a better blocker, but he doesn't have the size that Embiid has.
And I will say, this is more credit to Miles Turner, he was on the second-ranked defense in the NBA, as well as we've talked about this before, Nick, when it comes to his perimeter defense, he's actually a pretty good perimeter defender because his lateral quickness is up there with the length. Whereas Joel Embiid, if you take him out of the paint, he's a defensive liability at times. That would be my final 2 points. Rebounding, though, is way in Embiid's favor because Miles Turner is still very frustrating to watch when it comes to that.
Yo, I just have to give you guys some updates on some of the votes. We were talking about some of the votes being really bad for the other teams. Like, Kyrie Irving got a defensive team vote.
So did Russell Westbrook. Like, and that's disgusting. Like, Kyrie Irving
Harden did as well.
I mean, to me, it's like an absolute, again, this is actually a travesty that Russell Westbrook got any votes. Like, he was horrific defensively. James Harden has at least a good post. Well, yeah. And James Harden's at least a good post defender. Kyrie Irving's at least in a good defensive system. But what I need more than anything is I need Snats Don't Lie on a Tree.com t-shirt. Give it to me. Make it for me now. DSGandTree.com/off the glass.
I have to point out a couple more too. Like Kyle Anderson got votes and he didn't even play like majority of the season. Jordan Bell was out of the rotation a lot of the year and he got votes. Like what is going on with this system? Nikola Jokic had – wait, is this real? Am I reading the right thing right now? Nikola Jokic had defensive team votes.
Snats don't lie.
Snats don't lie. Anything else you guys want to touch on rumor-wise or anything like that before we get out of here?
No, Kyrie to BK. We'll see. I spoke it into existence just a few weeks ago on the Brooklyn Buzz, and we'll be keeping up with that on the Buzz as an all the other
pods. Corey's take on that real quick. What do you think about that possibility of a Kyrie, D'Angelo Russell backcourt? I gave my take. Jack gave his take on the Buzz.
I don't think it's terrible, but I think it could be very problematic.
The defensive stats would be horrible.
Yeah, defensive stats would be the first issue. And then offensively, although I do think D'Lo can play kind of like an off-guard role, I think it actually might suit him a little bit better if he didn't have the ball in his hands so much. He could kind of focus on just being more of a scorer. But I don't know. I feel like Kyrie and him, I don't know, I feel like you have a Dion Waiters situation almost where both guys just need the ball in their hands more.
Yeah, I actually think
it could be fun, though.
I think it would be fun. I actually think D'Angelo would almost make more sense to have him as the guard, the lead guard, and then Kyrie goes back into the role we saw him in Cleveland, where he was the most successful as, like, D'Angelo's like the LeBron in the situation. Obviously, he's not LeBron, but he's a really good passer. I wouldn't want him not to be the passer that he is, and I feel like I'm not a huge fan of the pair-up, but I could see why people would want it. And defensively, I would be nervous every night, and I tweeted something out like, you need to have, like, three really, really good defenders if they're your two starters at the backcourt.
Yeah, yes. The snats are going to be out of control.
Snats are crazy, dog. But that'll snat it up for the night.
We're hearing the Blog Talk Radio and Apple Podcast snats on this podcast.
Yeah, snats for everyone. Good night.